Welcome to Justice Today, the official podcast of the Department of Justice's Office of Justice Programs, where we shine a light on cutting-edge research and practices and offer an in-depth look at what we're doing to meet the biggest public safety challenges of our time. Join us as we explore how funding, science, and technology help us achieve stronger communities. I am your host, Karen Friedman. I am the Director of Criminal Justice, Innovation, Development, and Engagement at the Office of Justice Programs, or OJP, Bureau of Justice Assistance, BJA. September is National Recovery Month, an occasion when we can acknowledge the millions of Americans who have transformed their lives by recovering from addiction or substance abuse disorder. Our guest today is someone who has traveled her own personal journey to recovery and has dedicated her professional life to helping others do the same. Doreen Schenkenberger is Chief Executive Officer of Partners for Progress in Anchorage, Alaska. Her organization supports people who are addressing addiction throughout the state of Alaska. Partners for Progress plays an integral role in the work of drug and treatment courts in and about 10 Alaskan cities. It operates a center for formerly incarcerated people re-entering society, and it has organized a statewide network of drug court alumni that helped give rise to a national movement. Doreen first joined Partners for Progress as a volunteer shortly after she herself graduated from treatment court in Anchorage. We are so happy that she has agreed to share her remarkable story and her passion for her work with us. Welcome, Doreen. How are you today?
I'm fine, Karen. Thank you very much. Really happy to be here with you all today.
Well, we are honored to have you, and I really enjoyed meeting you a couple of weeks ago at the National Association of Drug Court Professionals and hearing your story, and I knew that we just had to get you on the podcast so you could share your story with all our listeners. I'd really like to start with your personal history, which really has led you to where you are today and to what you're doing here today, and your story is really quite remarkable. You grew up in Nome, Alaska, graduated third in your high school class, first person in your family to finish college, got a great job, but at the same time, your entire family struggled with addiction. You started drinking when you were about 13 years old, and by the time you were in your 20s, you had gotten four DUIs. That sound accurate?
It does.
Okay, so please tell us about these extraordinary contrasts in your life. Tell us about that.
Right, they are, but I don't think it's I think a lot of people suffering substance use disorder and addictions go through this in their family environment where it's really not good at home, and your parents are alcoholic and as well as many people in your family. So alcohol mainly is just had a grip on my family for three generations. I sat down one day and literally tried to think back through my whole family tree, anyone else that was sober in my family, and I couldn't find anyone except my grandmother on my mother's side. Wow. Everybody, as far back as I could remember, has struggled with alcoholism and addiction in our family. And it's unfortunately taken two of my brothers, one by suicide and both by suicide due to drinking and drugs. It's taken two of my nephews have overdosed. My mother and my grandfather died from alcoholism, and I have an uncle that a lot of people up here in Alaska freeze to death in the wintertime if they're struggling with substances, and that was my uncle, and he froze to death in a snowbank 3 feet from the front door.
Wow.
So I poured myself into school early on and always managed to do really well, but I think it wasn't because I loved school. School wasn't an escape for me from family life and just all of the stress at home and the drinking and other abuse at home. I poured myself into school and did very well, but I think it was more to kind of try to take the focus off my family. Early on, I knew my family was very different. When I went to my friends' homes for dinner, they actually sat down together and they spoke to each other cordially, and there wasn't fighting and yelling. And so I knew our family was very different. So I think as a young person, I tried to do everything I can so as not to, so nobody would really know what it was like at home. You know, there was a lot of shame there. And of course, I started drinking very early, 13 years old. And I can remember it vividly to this day. I got drunk the first time I drank. And so I think from the very beginning, I was addicted.
Right. Okay. So you, tell us about the DUIs. You've gotten arrested 4 times for DUIs. And after that 4th DUI, you successfully completed a treatment program and entered recovery.
My first recovery period was about 10 years and 3 months. I moved to Anchorage with my fiance in 88 or 89. And once in Anchorage, I started getting DUIs. One after another, I got 4 DUIs in 4 years, which was horrible.
Yep.
I went to jail 4 times, and they started adding on jail time, you know, and instead of suspended sentencing. By the 4th DUI, I was looking at 8 months in jail, or no, a little less than that. Once I got my 4th, I entered a Clitheroe program and a 90-day women's program, and my husband did it with me, and I managed to stay sober for 10 years and 3 months. Went to meetings, had a sponsor. It was really a wonderful time. Had 2 kids, finished college, got a great job. So things were going really, really well.
And then I understand around that time you had a terrible tragedy, and your husband was killed in an airplane crash, correct?
He was in 2002. He and his father, my father-in-law, he came up every year, and they would fly to the cabin and spend, you know, 2-3 weeks, you know, dad and son time. And they were on that trip, but they didn't come back on the day they were supposed to. So we started making phone calls, and nobody had seen them. And I knew in my gut something happened, because he was always in contact, you know, and he would have gotten word to us somehow. So I just was filled with this dread. And that night I remember vividly going to the liquor store and getting a half a rack of beer and coming home and relapsing.
Right. And then not long after that, you got your 5th DWI or DUI, depending on which jurisdiction you're in, right?
Yeah, DUI is for sure up here in Alaska. So I drank for a year. When my husband died, I drank for a year. One of my best friends, who was also my neighbor, came over and practically took my kids and said, "You're not in any shape to watch the kids. I'm going to keep them." And I didn't do anything to stop her, because I knew they would be better off with her. And I started driving drunk again. And pretty soon, a year, almost a year to the day my husband died, I got my 5th DUI. Then I was looking at 8 months of jail time. I mean, it was very serious, and, you know, possibly losing my kids. I just didn't know. And I had an attorney, and I had heard about therapeutic court from a couple of other people, and I asked him about it, and he got me a date to go and sit in and watch the process. And then I applied to therapeutic court, and they accepted me into the Muni Alcohol Therapeutic Court program. And I began my recovery journey.
Wow. Okay. So let's explain that a little bit to our listeners. So for those who may not know, therapeutic courts, what Doreen is talking about is our treatment courts, or there are many different words that are used to describe what a therapeutic court is. It could either be a problem solving court, sometimes it's called, or a diversion court, but many people know it as drug courts, and in during case it would be alcohol, but it's basically a specialty court that deals with a specialized problem that the individual, the defendant that is in that court, is dealing with. And therapeutic court or treatment courts or problem-solving courts, however you want to call them, are very different from traditional courts. Rather than stressing the punishment for past bad acts, the goal is to prevent future bad acts by addressing the underlying cause that has brought that individual in front of the judge. The judges in these courts, the prosecutors, the defense attorneys, all work together with the entire specialty court team to address the needs of this individual and to help this person in the court into recovery. And I know that for you, as well as many, many other people, this experience was really transformative. Could you tell us a little bit about that and your experience?
Absolutely. It was my first experience in court where it wasn't punitive. You know, my four other arrests in the past for DUIs have always been, you know, very punitive. We have some of the toughest DUI laws here in Alaska, so it was, you know, mandatory jail times, mandatory fines that kept increasing. We're talking in the thousands of dollars of fines and just a lot of restrictions. And when I walked into therapeutic court, I knew even from sitting in before I was admitted that this was a very different court program. It was very, a lot more relaxed. It was very inviting. Everybody seemed to be really invested in helping people. So that was very different. And so my first appearance when they let me enter therapeutic court was really comforting. I was so stressed and, you know, my kids were living with my girlfriend and I was looking at this, all this jail time and thousands of dollars in fines. And they told me that they were on my side and that they were going to help me fight this. And if I did this program, it would change my life and I wouldn't have to go to jail. I wouldn't have to pay the fines. And so I absolutely signed the Rule 11 agreement and started therapeutic court. And to this day, you know, I'm in contact with the court coordinators. The judge, in fact, Judge Wanamaker, is on the board of directors of Partners.
Oh, awesome.
He's retired now, but I've maintained a relationship with him.
Love it.
It's just been a wonderful, wonderful journey.
Yeah. Well, I could obviously tell you from, you know, the judge's perspective, because I, as you know, I was a drug court judge before joining BJA. There's nothing more rewarding. I think from a, you know, from a judge's perspective to be able to see people heal and, you know, be reunited with children, be reunited with loved ones and become part of their community again in a healthy, productive way, there is nothing that is more rewarding. And I always say that, you know, it's definitely the most rewarding professional experience of my life. Just, you know, watching people's lives just transform into having hope again and feeling like yourself again and just, you know, seeing the effect on the entire family is just, it's incredibly, incredibly rewarding and moving. So after you finished your 18-month program in the treatment court, You volunteered to work at Partners for Progress and began mentoring other people who were in treatment courts. And you eventually were appointed to the board of directors, then eventually joined the staff, and now you have risen to be the CEO. It's such an incredible story, Doreen. Really, it's just such it's just so wonderful. Tell our listeners a bit about the work that Partner does.
I definitely. We're a 501c3. We were founded back in 1998, I believe. And it came to be because a couple of community members, one being Judge Wanamaker and the other being Janet McCabe, a city planner, wanted to do something about the people on the street, downtown Anchorage here, that were obviously addicted and many of them homeless. They wanted to help somehow. And so Judge Wanamaker had heard about therapeutic courts in the States. We didn't have therapeutic courts up here at that time in Alaska. And so he said, how about we try to start a therapeutic court? And so they started writing grants. They started talking to the court system here and the municipality. And they got the very first therapeutic court going here in Alaska. And we've got 17 now statewide. And Partners has helped to... help to develop all of those courts, and we're still doing that work. So we get state grants every year to support all those courts statewide with housing services, housing and indigent support. We also have in Anchorage here a reentry center that we opened in 2013 that helps formerly incarcerated individuals with treatment and housing and other supports to get them back on their feet. The therapeutic courts uses our employment and training center that we have here to find jobs. So we support both therapeutic courts and reentry in many different ways. We have several housing programs through the state and several peer support grants that we also administer. So
fabulous, fabulous. And I understand you also helped found the Alaska Treatment Court Alumni Association. It's a statewide organization of people who mentor other people going through treatment courts. And I understand it's been in the forefront of a national movement to include more alumni in the treatment court process. How did that all come about?
So it's been a long road. After I graduated therapeutic court in 2005, the chairman of the board of partners came to me and said, you know, maybe you guys should form a graduate group for support. You know, because our journey through therapeutic court is so special and it's very, it's different, very mm-hmm. different from yeah. other programs. The idea seemed, you know, great. So we formed the very first alumni group. Started having meetings and dinners and picnics and things like that. And people were coming, and even current participants started coming. So we started going into the courts for graduations and to share our story with current participants and let them know that we've got some good sobriety now, some good recovery, and we want to give back now. Give back to the courts that saved our lives. We want to help current participants go through the program, which isn't easy. It's the toughest program out there, and not everybody makes it. But if you can get through this program, we always tell the participants, you've got a really high chance of staying out and staying sober for the long term. So the alumni group has grown since 2006. We're our own 501c3 now, and we do peer support statewide. We offer over 40 peer support groups per month to help participants through the program.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I mean, I know from my perspective, you know, even sitting on the court for years, the advice that you, as someone with lived experience, can share with other people who are struggling is incomparable. And there's nothing I can say that's going to mean as much as what you can share, having gone through the experience and have come out the other side and doing so great. So that encouragement that you provide is just key to success. So, you know, what type of things do you share when you're mentoring people who are going through the treatment court and entering recovery? You know, what do you tell them? What do you think are some of the most important lessons that that you can share to help people succeed?
I think one of the first ones is our own personal stories and that they're not alone.
Yeah.
A lot of people suffering from addiction think that, oh, what they've done is so horrible and what's been done to them is so horrible, and they just can't, you know, share that. They don't think anyone else could understand or know what they've gone through, but we do. You know, as peers, as fellow graduates of therapeutic court, we all have a personal story, and we've all been through terrible times, and we've all done damage. And we tell participants that you're in the right place now. You know, this is one of the best programs nationwide, and you could really turn your life around with this program if you do what's advised, if you do what they say. And we're here to help you and support you in that, because we've gone through it. And we know best what we need to stay sober. Those of us with long-term recovery, I think somebody, even one of the trainers, said that when you're at NADCP, ask those who have some long-term recovery. They know what's needed to maintain them.
Right. Because so that maintenance is so key. And I think people don't understand that addiction can't be cured. It's not a matter of curing it. It's a matter of learning how to maintain that recovery and sobriety every single day, because every single day it probably will be a struggle. But gaining the tools to be able to maintain that sobriety is really what's key. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. You know, it's work. It kind of starts after you graduate from therapeutic court, because then you're on your own, and you have to do this alone. You don't have all of that team wrapped around you anymore. And that's, again, where the alumni come in. We wrap around graduates, and, you know, we can share with them. It takes ongoing meeting support. It takes ongoing peer support. It takes ongoing work every day to maintain your recovery. You need to have a mentor or a sponsor, and you need to be accountable and honest. You know, the rigorous honesty we talk about
honesty, so important.
And those of us in long-term recovery have, you know, certain things that we do to maintain that, and that's what we can share with participants and with graduates.
I'd love if you could tell our audience about what is being done nationwide as far as alumni and peer support.
We actually, as a peer group, from our meetings and having a regular support network here in Alaska and starting to build on that, we started going to the National Association of Drug Court Professionals annual conference, just because we wanted to learn as much about therapeutic courts as we could in addiction and recovery. And it was, we've been going for about 12 years, I think. We've been going to conference for about 12 years. And in the very beginning, there was very little talk about peer support. It was just, you know, a mention here and there about peer support. And so we started presenting at NADCP and presenting about what we were doing in Alaska, about organizing and forming an alumni group and offering peer support back to current participants, and how we're, you know, we work with the courts today, all volunteer, of course, but it was really fulfilling something in us that we needed to give back to this program that was just so purposeful. And pretty soon, NADCP, who's always, you know, been researching peer support and ways to support therapeutic courts, so they were looking at this too, even way back then. It just hadn't gotten any momentum. So we started working with NADCP. They started asking us to come and give presentations, and they invited us to focus groups and planning groups, looking into alumni and maybe working at a national level. It used to be just a vision, but 2 years ago, several of us alumni got together and met with NADCP, and they really want to support this national effort now. And now it's really happening. I mean, for the first time ever at conference, graduates have their own training tracks.
Yeah, it's great.
Several presentations on peer support, and peer support has exploded in Alaska. I mean, from the time we started doing it, you know, every program now has peer support. I mean, peer support is almost a requirement now of programs involving treatment and addiction and recovery.
Yeah, I think if I'm not mistaken, there were over 150 therapeutic court graduates at the conference this year, which is amazing. And I think that number is just going to continue to grow each year.
And it's wonderful. And just like therapeutic court wrapping around you, you know, NADCP is really welcoming graduates and alumni to come back and to join this national effort.
Yeah. I mean, because there's a real recognition of how important sharing that lived experience is for people who are struggling. It's really, really key.
And states are recognizing this. You know, we've been going to our capital in Juneau every year to lobby for more funding for therapeutic courts, more therapeutic courts, and more recovery money, more treatment money. And because of that, they actually awarded us a legislative yearly grant in the capital budget. So it comes every year for a full-time statewide peer support coordinator for our group.
Wow, that's great.
There's just more and more paid positions now being offered nationally through the courts and through the states for people with lived experience, because everybody's recognizing how important it is for long-term recovery.
Yeah. Wonderful. So I know that your recovery has not only had an impact on you, but your children, obviously, your immediate family and your community. You want to tell us a little bit about how your family and your children are doing now?
Sure. As I mentioned in the beginning, you know, growing up in an alcoholic household, addiction and substance use, it's just had devastating effects on my family for generations. And that is common here in Alaska. You know, we have some of the highest rates nationwide for substance use disorder. I can remember at one point in our reentry program, we had a young man, his father and his grandfather, all just coming out of incarceration and entering our program. And, you know, fortunately, we were able to help them.
Right.
But for my own family, my recovery's really had made a real difference in my children's lives. You know, they've seen me sober more than they have not seen me sober, because I was sober when I had them, you know, up till their father died. And then after graduating therapeutic court, I've been able to maintain that sobriety, and they're doing well today. They both have are in college. My son will graduate next May with, he's going to the California Maritime Academy. So graduate with his third mate's ticket. And he's been working, you know, every summer since he's been in college. He just got home from being out in the Gulf of Mexico all summer.
Wow.
And my daughter will graduate with her graduate degree in anthropology. She's an archaeologist.
Wow.
Graduate next summer. With her master's, and she just got home from a contract job in Guam all summer on an archaeological dig in Guam. And they're both in their 20, they're 26 and 28, and I was well into my addiction by that time. And so, you know, there's hope and there's a chance for my kids. And my sisters, I got to go home for a visit to Nome, where I'm from, this summer, and for the first time in our family's history, all four of us were sober.
Oh,
my three sisters are sober now, and I really feel that my journey has had a lot to do with that. You know, that because I've shared it with them, even when they didn't want to
hear about it. Yeah.
I was always there whispering in their ear, you know, I've got a remarkable life today and it's full of joy and it's prosperous and it's healthy and it's, you know, I'm really living life. I have a wonderful career and, you know, they could have that too. And so we're all in recovery now. And I think it's absolutely due to this program.
Wow. Well, Doreen, I can't tell you how much I and everyone appreciates all the work that you're doing and your willingness to share your story with us. Thank you so much for joining us today on Justice Today. And I'm just so impressed by everything you've been able to accomplish and just want to continue hearing your great successes. And I'm so happy for you. It's just wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. And thank you for your support too. It's really meaningful.
Pleasure.
Justice Today is the official podcast of the Office of Justice Programs.